Welcome to the ASC podcast. I'm your host, Naomi Crane, and on behalf of everyone here at the ASC, I hope you enjoy the show. Our mission here at the podcast is to help you build your skills, knowledge, and success in the business of songwriting through conversations with professionals from across the music industry. We're glad you're here and hope you enjoy today's show. Hi everyone, welcome to the ASC podcast. Today I'm bringing you a great interview with Anthony Snape. Anthony is an Aussie songwriter, singer, guitarist and a fantastic performer whose career is all the more impressive because he's built it entirely as an independent artist. Anthony has a global fan base, whom he calls Snape Stars, built through the writing and releasing of his own albums, writing for sync and for other artists, and through live performance. He's had songs synced to shows such as The Dr. Oz Show, Married at First Sight, Saturday Night Live, Good Morning America, The Queen Latifah Show, and General Hospital, and that is just the start. In this interview, we discuss Anthony's beginnings in music, some early influences, and how strategically important moving to Nashville was. We talk about the challenges he faced moving back to Australia, what COVID added to that mix, and the blossoming of his unique approach to live streaming concerts. Anthony has been doing a weekly 1.5 hour or more live stream concert, totally free, for almost a year. If you're listening to this interview before April 8, 2021, you can attend an online workshop Anthony's doing for the ASC in which he'll unpack his approach to live streaming, how he does it, and what makes it so successful for him. It'll be well worth attending. The one thing I've really been struck by is Anthony's genuine belief that music is relational. It is there to add benefit to the consumer's world, and the more love, the more engagement, the more authentic relationship the artist can build with the audience, the more that audience will respond by supporting the artist financially. And Anthony does that because he is simply one of the nicest people you will ever meet, and it oozes from him in this interview as well as in his music and his live shows. Check him out at anthonysnape.com, listen to some tunes, then come back and finish listening to this podcast. He was a pleasure to spend time with, and I really hope you enjoy my interview with Anthony Snape. Anthony, welcome to the ASC podcast. It's great to have you here.
Wonderful to be here.
You're a fairly long time fan of ours. You were at our last conference, which was 2018. And I know since then I have been part of a group that had you in to do some songwriting tutoring for us. And that was great. I've watched your live streams. I'm just really excited to interview you because I know you're a goldmine of information, but you're also one of the nicest people I've met in the industry thus far. So I'm really looking forward to digging into a bit of your life and your history and what you know.
Thank you. That's a lovely thing to say. And I have to add to that, well, I, in my experience at least, all the people that sort of come across as sort of genuine and give you, you know, as much of their time as they can, they're the ones that, you know, generally are the ones in the industry that, you know, are comfortable, I guess, in their space and are willing to give some of the experience that they have. Like all the best ones are nice. I mean, I don't consider myself that nice, but I do like to, you know, share information where I can, because one of the big things about living overseas and living in America for so long, because I grew up in Australia, released my first music here and then went overseas. And the differences between the way that the industry works and the way that they treat people in the industry treat each other was so different. And in Australia, the tall poppy syndrome thing sort of seems to stifle a lot of people in the way that they deal with other people. And it's a real shame because in the States, everybody lifts each other up. And when you get into a situation where you are exploring a new area or you moving to a new place for the first time, having a whole bunch of people that give you opportunities and lift you up really makes a massive difference. And I think that Australia misses out on a lot of that stuff because I think people feel like that they've got to protect their little world a little bit because the industry in Australia is a lot smaller. And so in the background, especially at higher levels in the Australian industry, you feel that kind of closed door kind of scenario that doesn't happen as much overseas. So what I try and do when I speak in Australia and when I bring the stuff that I've learned back to Australia as an independent artist, I try and bring some of that, you know, open door thing back to Australia, because this is how everyone will be able to help each other out and move forward and learn from each other. It's super important. And I think that, you know, more people should sort of open the door. that's how I feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's very much behind the philosophy of the ASC and Lisa, our founder. So you've kind of touched a bit on it there. So let's start a little bit of how you got into music. What's the backstory of Anthony Snape?
Well, I grew up in a little town called Gunnedah, which is northwest New South Wales. I was fortunate enough that I could sing. It was something that I always wanted to do. I can't remember ever wanting to do anything else other than maybe acting. But singing was something that was really important to me when I was a kid. And I don't have any reason for it. None of my, well, I've got cousins that are in bands in Newcastle, in the Newcastle area, but I didn't really even know much about them when I had made, you know, the decision early on in my life that I wanted to be a singer. And so I just kind of went about my world just doing the things that I could do to be a singer. And it led me to lots of things through school, you know, doing school musicals and, you know, working closely with the teachers, the music teachers in my different schools. And I tell you what, teachers are such incredible individuals. In my whole schooling life, honestly, when you're a child and you have a teacher that sort of helps you achieve the things that even the small goals that you want to achieve in those moments, they make incredible differences in your life and how your life sort of pans out. Because those early times when you're facing challenges, they give you all the tools that you need at that point to go into the world and face challenges over and over again, which you will have to do. But one of the interesting things that I, looking back on it now, into my high school life, I had two major influences in my life in high school from music teachers. And one was somebody who I didn't get along with at all, who didn't like anything that I did. And the other was the person who was helping me the whole way and, you know, opening up opportunities for me. And at the time, I just had no idea what sort of an influence that negative one had on me as a human being. But it was a really wonderful training ground to be in that environment where everything that I did as a student and in music, one of them would just do their best to make, you know, make sure everyone knew that it was terrible and that it was awful and, you know, did everything that she could to make my life difficult. And the other one was the absolute opposite. But facing that at an early age was really wonderful because it opens you up to the idea that you cannot please everyone and not everyone's going to like what you do. In fact, if everyone likes what you do, someone's lying because no one is set to like all of the music you create. You have a certain collection of people that would resonate with the music that you make. And then there's a whole gamut of people that will never like the music you like. And that's totally fine. It's all about, you know, getting out there and finding your market. So, yeah, so I grew up in a little town, Gunnedah. I had some wonderful opportunities to go to Sydney and to work with some people in Sydney through the School Spectacular and then the Talent Development Project, which was a New South Wales program run in public schools. And I met a whole bunch of people through that and ended up moving to Sydney and started my first band in Sydney. And we actually, that was when I did full time for the first time. And that was a wonderful experience as well. And then I released my album, worked with lots of really great people and got the opportunity to go to America and then spent 10 years in America, recording and writing and touring with some amazing people, including Tommy Emmanuel. I was the opening act for him for many, many, many shows across America and through Europe and the UK and through just so many incredible experiences. One of my favourites was London. We played this massive venue in London, and it's called Festival Hall. And walking out onto the stage in Festival Hall and having the whole stage and the audience to myself was just such a very, very cool experience that I plan on repeating. And, you know, out of that, I've written a bunch of songs for film and TV and have had songs on lots of different television shows and been independent the whole way. So I had my own independent publishing and taken care of all of the income streams as I've moved forward through the industry, which is, you know, been wonderful, and it's been really difficult at the same time. But that's sort of me in a nutshell, I guess.
So 10 years, you were based in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And as songwriters, Nashville's kind of our mecca. How important is it to be able to be in Nashville if you want to be a writer?
Well, when I first released my album in Australia, Nashville honestly wasn't on my radar. And because I released as a pop rock artist, and I didn't even think about Nashville, not even in the slightest. The first time I, actually before I released that album, I had some interviews on ABC Radio, the national program. And that interviewer mentioned Nashville to me, and I was like, Nashville? Like, why would I go to Nashville? It was mentioned to me a bunch of times from, you know, from different managers and different people in the industry as I was going out, and I'd been releasing my own material in Australia. And it wasn't until I got the invitation from Tommy to go and open for his shows in the States. The only reason we went to Nashville was because he was based there.
Right.
So I didn't go to Nashville for any particular reason other than the fact that my tour started there and I'd never been to America before. So, you know, we needed to start in a place that, you know, at least was the start of the tour and we could learn and grow, you know, from there. And then it hit me when I arrived in Nashville that Nashville isn't just a country music town. It is a songwriting town where every single day and every moment and every gig, everywhere that you go, are incredible writers and other writers that are learning and songs being turned over and over and over, where the bar is set so high for a song where you need to almost write a song where you can have just any random person get up and sing it and the song stands on its own. You know what I mean? The song's so strong, and every single piece of that song radiates whatever the songwriter wanted to put out there. So it doesn't matter who sings it, that song still comes across and moves people. Powerful songs like that. And I was just super inspired by being there and going out every night and listening to other artists play and listening to the different songs that were played there. And it did feel like home, you know. It just felt like a wonderfully comfortable, creative space to be in. And it's an epic city because from a music and songwriting point of view, because you have some of the greatest session players in the world that are just all living there. And they get up every morning and they have their coffee and they go into the studio and then they record all day and then they go home to their families and that's their life. And they just happen to be the best session players in the world. You know, they're just incredible. And then, you know, obviously you've got all the writing teams and then all the industry that's there. And so you can pretty much go through and have, you know, 5 to 6 meetings in a day quite easily in Nashville because the business is so close. Whereas when you go to LA and you try and get to some of those record labels and organize meetings, you can fit maybe 2 in a day because of the distances between the companies and the traffic and all that sort of stuff. So it really is a town where you get things done. Like, it's a business town. You get in there, you write the songs, you get them recorded, you turn over a record in a really short amount of time because the players are so great, and then you do all the business there as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a very special place.
Yeah, certainly was my impression. I've been to Nashville once. I was there about a month, and just it's hard to explain to people that it's a song town, even though there are some great performers and you do see great performances. It's about the song, and the audience is looking for the song more mm-hmm. than a great performance. And it's a great place for any writer, just regardless of genre or skill level, just to go and hear it and feel it and understand.
Absolutely.
Can be like this.
Well, the whole point of surrounding yourself with people that are better than you, that's a huge part of becoming a better writer or a better, musician or anything. If you're always surrounding yourself with people that are just, kicking goals left, right, and center, you've got all these wonderful influences just sitting around you, and you can't help but be influenced by them. And so that's, part of what makes Nashville amazing. But I will say, as an artist, as a performer, going out and playing, the Writer's Nights and, the Bluebirds and all that sort of stuff is wonderful. And there is a period of time where it's important to go and do all of that. But you will get to a point, as I did, where you start to crave an audience that is, a regular audience, because if that audience is a Nashville audience and they're only after the song, then all the artistry kind of gets put to the side. Yeah, and so you don't, what you miss out on if you are playing a lot of the Writer's Nights in Nashville is you miss out on seeing an artist in their place for a set, a whole set where you get to be taken on a journey. And as an artist, you get to take an audience on a journey. If it's only about the singular song in those writing nights, then it becomes just about the song, and it's a wonderful thing, but it's also like anything else, it's you need a balance. And so that's why it's a great touring town. So tons of artists base themselves in Nashville and then tour from there. It's actually one of the touring hubs also, because a lot of the bus companies, actually, I don't know whether the bus companies are there because it's a touring hub, or whether, right, whatever came first. But it's you'll see a lot of bands just base themselves out of Nashville and then tour from there, because they can reach, lots of different markets from Nashville, and be able to play for those audiences that crave artistry and collections of songs and all that sort of stuff that aren't particularly focused on singular songs.
Mm. So bouncing off some of the things you said there, Nashville's a great place to meet writers, a great place to meet writers better than you, though hopefully will write with you and help you form mm-hmm. your skills.
So the interesting thing about the idea of better, right? The idea of better for me is songwriters that are able to put together, pieces of music and lyrics that really make you feel something. And that's the key. And that moment of creating something that is so special that it sort of anybody can sing it and it communicates something. Sometimes there's only, three or four songs in a whole writer's collection of their whole career that reaches that level. But that's I don't think any of the people are better as people or anything like that. The way that I measure songs is the way that they make me feel. And the fact of the matter is, the way one particular song makes me feel is going to be totally different to the next person. So I don't think there's any, sure way of judging songs. And I've never been a real big fan of judging songs in that way, other than the fact that, does this song make me feel anything or not? Does it make me feel anything at all? Like, does it make me feel angry? Does it make me feel uncomfortable? And if it's made me feel uncomfortable, then it's done something, hasn't it? Why is it making me feel uncomfortable? All of those sort of things sort of come up. And in that way, it's really great, because it means that there's not this kind of list of things that you need to tick off as a songwriter, that you've got to go, okay, before I can become a great songwriter, I've got to tick these boxes. That doesn't exist. You've really just got to work at your craft. You can do some of those things and work on, the way that you use language, But the best way to do it is to learn from other songs and other writers that you love and respect, and, you know, just absorb the things that they do and try and emulate that until it becomes your own thing.
It's interesting because, again, my impressions from my short time in Nashville were sitting around writers' rooms, you know, showcase kind of gigs and other things, and hearing a lot of decent music. Mine was decent. And then suddenly a song would just floor you, and just listening and going, wow, that writer has, you know, all the quote unquote rules that we get told, you know, structurally in rhyme schemes and language, they have just nailed it, and it moves you. Yeah, I think there's that balance between writing something that works for me as the writer versus that moment you want to get in your audience, and, you know, those rules, those tools can help you get there. When you see someone who's managed to do both, something that feels very personal to the writer and also just grabs you by the heart at some point, or the gut, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, I guess that's what I mean by a great writer, someone who's mastered, at least for one song's worth of skills, the ability to do that. And I had never heard that outside of Nashville.
Right. And I think you're exactly right in the way that, you know, they've mastered that, or it's all sort of come together, like in that moment for that song.
Right.
But that can happen for anyone. And I think that the best way to think about it is there's a whole set of skills that you need to be able to just do the basic stuff, right? It's important to get that under your belt. And then any of the extra level stuff, like all the internal rhyming and all that kind of stuff, that's for some people it comes naturally. For others, they've got to kind of learn it. And it's good to know about all of that sort of stuff and just keep packing it into your head, right? All of the technical stuff, pack it into your knowledge base. And then when you go to write a song, forget about the whole thing, because it all exists in there, right? It's all swirling around in there. And the more that you write, the more songs that you put together, it's just practicing. Every song is a practice of putting the puzzle together. You've got all the same pieces. You know, I've got all the little nuances of the universe sitting around you. Okay, here we go. Here's the pieces. Let's put it together again and let's see if I can get it in a better order. That's really what it is. And the way that you're ordering it is based on all of the knowledge that you have up until this point, all the songs that you've heard, everything that's happened, the way you feel today, whether or not you've had a coffee, you know, all of those things influence what you're doing in the moment and putting this piece of puzzle together. And then at the end of it, you've created this thing that existed already, right? You've created this thing. It's just a different arrangement of parts, right? And words and emotions. And what does that word make this word feel like? And if I swap them around, does that word land a little bit better? All of those little nuances, you know, sort of come out in quite naturally after you've processed all of that technical information. It's already in your head. And then you just let yourself be creative. And then songs come out, and that's the way that it works for me, and that's the way that it works for a lot of people that I know. All that important technical stuff is there, but it's not at the forefront when you're writing the song. You're writing the song is that connection, that emotional connection.
At the last ASC conference, you were part of the Fly on the Wall songwriting session, where we got to watch you, Alan Roy Scott, and Gina Jeffries collaborate and write a song. And I've always found those so helpful, because here's three professional people. How do they manage the co-writing thing? And I mean, it's a whole other interview with you about what went on there and what I learned from that. I interviewed Gina a year or so back, and we talked about that song and how she loved that experience, but the song wasn't right for her in the end. And like, it's just fascinating, because the song was sounding so great. And by the by, she said, well, Anthony will sing anything and it'll sound great. I can't sing like he can, and I couldn't deliver that song with the power that he could. So, you know, note to self. most of your songs, as far as I can see, are co-writes, and you've written a lot with Lindsay Rhymes. I noticed Jason Bloom's there. What does co-writing bring that writing on your own doesn't?
It brings a lot of things. Obviously, it brings in all the skill sets of all the writers. It means that you are not allowed to be lazy in the write. So if you're writing on your own, it's super easy to go, I'm really not into it today. And put the song aside and go, I'll finish it another time, because it's not, you know, I don't feel right. And you can really, at least in my experience, you can really, you know, stifle your own creativity by having that voice in your head that's saying, oh, you know, it's not good enough or it's not right. Whereas when you've got someone else in the room bouncing ideas around, they can just turn that voice off super quick by going, oh, that part's fantastic. And so you tend to believe that other person in the room and more than you would believe the voice in your head as you move forward. Because if someone else is sort of bouncing off your ideas, then it's easier to move forward. So I think finishing songs is a lot easier in a co-writing scenario, because you've got a goal, you've got a time frame, and the song is saying what it's saying. And so it's really easy to sort of slot things in and then cut out the parts that are not working as well and better them. And because there's this tiny, this miniature competition inside the write as well, where you're trying to better the other person's idea as well, like, or even celebrate the great ones. Like someone comes up with a great idea, you're like, that is the most perfect thing for that spot, like that's the best line ever, and so you celebrate it and you put it in there and you go, yeah, that's like totally got it. Or you go, oh, it's not quite right, what is it, what do we need? And then you come up with the line, you know. So co-writing is for me, it's a really great way of sort of bouncing ideas around. I've had to force myself into doing since being in Nashville, co-writing was a thing also because of the business side. So you have your whole experience and the contacts that you have in songs and the people that you know that you've moved along the way. And then if you bring a co-writer in, they've got that whole experience as well. And so if you write a song with someone else, you're basically doubling the chances of that song being used because you've co-written it with somebody else that has a whole bunch of contacts that you don't have. Right. And so there's a way of thinking about it from a business perspective as well. And also if you add to the mix, you co-write a song with an artist, you know, that's where the real opportunities come in. You have a bunch of recording artists come through, and if you get to be in the room writing with them and write songs that they really feel strongly connected to, then the chances of you getting that song cut is, you know, way up there.
So now you're living here in Australia and not even in a big city, you're in the South Coast, yeah? How mm-hmm. has that changed, you know, the practical side of what you do for a living?
Yeah, it's it was a huge change. That was an important change for us. I personally didn't want to leave Nashville, but when you start having family, I've got two little children and they're both born in Nashville, which is really cool. And it just made us, as soon as you have kids, you realize how important family is to have around. And you look at your kids and you're like, well, you know, I really want you to have an experience with your cousins, and I want you to know your grandparents, and you want, you know, your kids to be influenced by those people in your world as well as you were, I guess, or to give them a similar experience as you as a kid. And I grew up, you know, here with family around and stuff. And so it was a super hard decision to bring everyone back, in the way of, if I thought about it just purely from a music standpoint, because it was near impossible to even compare. It is impossible. It's not even right. So the things that I would do daily in Nashville sort of all disappeared, all the studio work and that, where I was physically walking in. But in saying that, that all disappeared anyway with COVID. So this push onto online has been really wonderful, because I still get to connect with everyone and do that stuff as if I'm there anyway. So that's not been such a bad thing for me. But what has changed is the ability to go to a lot of those showcases and, you know, and be in the room. And also as the artists, you know, come through, I miss that. And I miss my friends, you know, miss being able to go out and have drinks. But the thing is, everyone's in that boat now.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's been there now for more than a year. So it's you know, it's a very strange time that we're all in, and we're all feeling these, you know, emotions. But I tell you what, it's a great creative time, so many people are writing online, and I've done so many co-writes on Zoom, and, you know, it's just the way that we do things now, which is a great segue into to live streaming, actually, because I've been ever since the start of COVID and everything was shut down, I wanted to, I'd had a tour booked for the States, and, you know, everything booked and the flights booked and all that sort of stuff. And many other people have this same story. And obviously the whole thing just crashed and was like, okay, that's not going to happen. And it's like, okay, what do we do now? And so I jumped straight into streaming, online streaming, just doing my show for the people that wanted to jump on. And I thought, when I started the show, I thought maybe it might last a few weeks and that people might get sort of over the kind of having to sit in front of a computer. But it's been a lifeline. It's been amazing. It's been a lifeline, not only for me as an artist, but for a lot of the audience that comes every week to see my show. It's a wonderful community of people that check in on each other. And they, it's like a big family that's spread all across the world. Mm-hmm. And if someone, for example, if we go into the show and everyone says hi to each other and checks in to see how they've been that week, and there's, if someone's missing, people like message them in the background to see if they're okay and check in on them. So it's been a really interesting up and down emotional experience, because I've also lost people from COVID in that process, and so these are characters that would come into my world via the chat, and I would see their name and they would say what they would say, and they would exist and interact and affect the show. And, you know, to have them gone is super difficult. Also, as an artist, as you're playing, you know, these songs are highly emotional. And so it just brought people together even more. It's such a special way of connecting with your fan base in the world.
So in case anyone hasn't caught you, you do it Sunday mornings?
Yeah, so my show goes on, it's either Monday morning Australia time or Sunday morning Australia time, which is the previous day evening in the American section. But over in the UK, it's like, you know, midnight, and in Europe, it's 4 a.m. or something, but people still come on. So I've kept that time frame because it just, it kind of works in with my life. Getting up on Monday morning and doing a show for an hour and a half works out really well for me. And
that's a long show. You're doing that once a week.
Yeah, it's not that long. And it's longer than most streaming shows.
Yeah.
But I find that anything less than that, I don't even get to play all the songs that people ask for. Yeah. So so an hour and a half is, you know, is pretty much the standard kind of spot for me.
And you've done it weekly for at least, 6 months or so now?
Yeah, up to show number 49 next
49.
Week. Yep, 49 weeks in a row.
Wow.
We're almost on a year.
Yeah, wow.
And this is the other thing that is hard to contemplate. So for any artists and any writers that decide to do these streaming shows, whatever you put out there right now, it's like putting together a mini quick album, right? Because you've got all these songs that come together, but in that snapshot, which is what an album is, it's a snapshot of time that people get to remember. But in that snapshot of this show, this hour and a half, of these interactions with people as they're requesting songs and they're sharing stories about their life, and, you know, you're having this wonderfully real moment in here, it gets captured in a stream and is wonderful in the moment as a live thing that people can play with and interact with and affect the show. But as soon as you're done, it becomes this little time capsule that exists in that moment for as long as the internet will be.
Right.
We can't even imagine that time frame. How powerful that piece of information you just left there. I did one show where I dedicated songs to my great-great-grandkids.
Ah.
Right? Knowing that if the internet survives, right?
YouTube.
At some point, and if my family, you know, goes on and there are great 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 grandkids, they will watch me play that show, which is super cool because you get to travel into the future and talk to your future kids just in this little moment because you're creating something that lasts for as long as, you know, the technology will last. Maybe they won't find it. Maybe they will. Who knows? But it's something that is so much bigger than it's like writing a great song. The song itself and the process and everything that goes into it is what it is, and you pour all that energy into it. But when you've finished, what you've got is something that is so much bigger than you, so much bigger than you as the writer or you as the artist. It goes out into the world and has the power to affect so many people in so many different ways, and none of it has anything to do with you. That's a cool thing.
Anthony, I look at your website, several things struck me off the bat, all of which speak to your understanding of what you do, particularly at these times when live music, going to see live music hasn't been available to us, that you understand you are running an online business. I put your URL in, I get a landing page that just wants my email for in exchange for music, and I can click around that, but the primary purpose there is you need a mailing list. Then I go to your homepage. You've got lovely photos and stuff like most people would put, but then straight up there's the Spotify follow me button, and then your video, and then there's the give me a tip if you like this kind of button, and then there's your merch, and then, you know, a whole page to house concerts, which is a whole other conversation I'd love to have at another time. And then on your music page, people can listen, and there is the Spotify link, but there's also a purchase possibility. Like, everything seems to be set up, not just to go, how good am I as an artist, but here's how you can give me your email address, which is for online marketing, you know, the gold, and then give me money. And live streaming, I mean, we could talk about, you know, all those business things, but just to stick with the live stream idea, has that, I mean, and the kind of tipping that you talk about, like, what has that done for you in terms of the business of it? Does that work? Is it something that's been powerful? Like,
extremely powerful. And the reason it works is because you are always giving more than you get. So I put on an hour and a half live streaming show for free. And it's not the fact that it's free that really drives it. It's the fact that in that hour and a half, the connection that I'm able to share and the joy, hopefully, and the emotional exchange in that moment is so real for everyone who experiences it that a lot of the time they can't help but want to give something back, right? So if you are an artist and you're creating something and you have an audience that you want to, you know, interact with, it's not about, yeah, I've got all those things set up there so people can, if they want to, buy my merchandise and put a tip in and all that sort of stuff. But it's about adding something to people's lives that they can't get anywhere else. And that's important, right? It's about being consistently there for them and with them, you know? And it is like having a big family, right? You're there all the time. And you know what? Things can happen in people's lives and stuff changes and people move house and they get busy and work becomes too much and, you know, they might lose someone in their family. But guess what? That artist that they had, that they listened to their music like 5 or 10 years ago is still there if they want to listen to them, and they can tune in and feel whatever they want to feel in that moment. And then if they are in a position of being able to throw a donation in my direction, then I'm really grateful for it. And I'm fortunate enough that I've had the exposure to enough people that putting on a show like that can pay enough to be able to do it every week. Because it costs money to run a streaming show like that if you want to do it in a really, like if you want to do it in a more professional way. I use a site called StreamYard.com, which is a staging website for streaming. And that costs, you know, a fair bit of money per year to utilize. But there's a ton of them like that. But the thing about the music business, the music industry, and what we do as artists and writers, it's really the commercialization of music has happened over time, you know, as the world became this big commercial enterprise. You know, we live in a world driven by economics. And so to be able to do the things that you want to do, you have to make it work economically. It needs to be, you know, needs to be able to make enough money for you to, you know, continue to do what you wish. Music itself doesn't exist in that realm, you know, as a natural thing. Music exists for everyone. Everyone is as much a creator as they are an absorber of music. That's the beauty of this substance. That's why it's so powerful. When I do writing workshops and I say, look, guys, if any one of you in here can feel the power of a song, like if anyone here has felt that incredible, overwhelming sensation after listening to a song, then you can actually create that feeling in other people at the same time. Not at the same time, but you have the ability to create that feeling in other people because you are a creative living being, right? Every single individual can be as creative and be a writer and, you know, play with this stuff, because if you can feel it, you can make it. That's one of the things that I think that the industry has sort of oppressed, because their idea is that they need to make money, as much money as they can, out of a particular act. If you went next door and you got into a conversation with your neighbor and you wrote a song about their particular experience, they would feel it, right? They would feel something from your thing. And then in that little moment, you have created something that is just incredibly special for that person that lives next door. Nobody else knows about it, and that's fine. But what labels do and what the industry does is it raises an artist up on a pedestal and it says, look how special this person is. Look how special their music is. When you start looking at that person and you start teasing away the details, you go, wow, that person is super special because they've got these things and the way that they think and they sing that, like, it's so, there's a vulnerability, there's, you know, this strength, and they've gone through this. But I tell you what, if you take any individual, anyone at all, put them up on a pedestal and start teasing away those details, you will find exactly the same forces that are going on that make you feel that. Because we've all got that. It's all there. So if you know that, and you know that the business is to create this incredibly interesting thing, put it up on a pedestal and put a fence around it and then charge you admission. That's what the industry tries to do. This is super special. Here's a fence. Pay me to see it. Right? That's just the way it works. If you were to survive in the business, you've got to figure out your own little way of doing that. And the way that I've done it and the way that I've seen many other independent artists do it is they work out a way of being able to give way more creatively and find that connection with their audience as much as possible and then open the door for people to reciprocate. And most of the time people do.
Andy, I've just got twice as many questions now written down. I'll have to talk to you again. I'm sure anyone listening also has many questions, and you'll just have to come to the conference and ask Anthony. But if you want to know more about Anthony's live streaming, 8th of April, he's doing a workshop for the ASC. It'll be on the website, AustralianSongwritersConference.com, and live streaming is the topic. Mm-hmm. So he's going to pull apart what he does, how he does it, and how to make it work. I think it'll be well worth I'm not sure what the charge fee is yet, but whatever it is, I think it'll be well worth it. I've put my eye over the basic syllabus, and I certainly am intending to be there. In the meantime, go to anthonysnape.com. You can see his live stream, and you will see that when Anthony talks about connecting with his audience throughout the live stream, he is just so vulnerable himself. He is caring. He is friendly. And if you could bottle that and sell it, Anthony, it'd be a gazillionaire. But I think any artist wanting to do that can use you as a model to learn how to do that connecting, because I think you do that exemplarily.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's April 8, 2021. And our conference is coming up June long weekend this year. And
Thank you,
Anthony. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
As usual, you're being very generous. Thank you so much, and I'll see you.
Pleasure.
Hey, bye.
See you then.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast today. If you'd like more information about any of the activities of the ASC, check out AustralianSongwritersConference.com.